From Directions Magazine, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, November 13th, 2012. This weekly podcast brings you the latest information on geospatial technology and all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief, today in Amsterdam, the Netherlands.
And this is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor, today in Belfast, Maine.
How will declining federal budgets impact geospatial activity related to jobs and innovation? Will it spur entrepreneurism, and where? Much geospatial activity is in supporting federal projects, and that may be likely to change. We'll discuss this and more, but first, a word from our sponsor. Directions Magazine, already the global leader in geospatial technology news, has launched Directions Magazine India, featuring a weekly newsletter and topical webinars specifically about the growth of GIS in India. Point your browser to directionsmag.in today. And Directions will bring its Location Intelligence Conference to Brazil. On June 19, 2013, LI Brazil will be co-located with the Mundo Geo Connect Conference in Sao Paulo. More information can be found at locationintelligence.net. Thanks, and be sure to tell a friend about Directions. So over the last few weeks, I've heard presentations and I've talked with individuals who were supposedly in the know about the impending fiscal cliff and the possible draconian, at least to some, cuts in the U.S. federal defense budget. I've attended a presentation by Frank Kendall, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, who believes that Congress will settle on cuts of about $10 billion a year over the next 10 years. It's a number, he says, that the Pentagon can live with. I've also spoken to former Congressman Bud Kramer. He represented the 5th District of Alabama. He's now chairman of Wexler & Walker Public Policy Associates, and he, too, thinks that a resolution is forthcoming, perhaps with a replacement of the sequestration with something different. And I want to read from his report that came out recently, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes. And it says, after a likely short-term delay of these issues in the lame duck session, the president will be motivated to work with members of Congress to develop a deficit reduction scheme, including these and other looming issues. Such an arrangement may contain a replacement of the sequester with many of the proposals outlined in the National Commission on Fiscal Responsibility and Reform, otherwise known as Simpson-Bowles. In addition, the same report from Wexler & Walker says, and I quote, after the lame duck session, President Obama has indicated that his second term priorities will include immigration, education, energy independence, and critical infrastructure. And I believe you can hear some of that might impact the geospatial technology spending situation. The last conversation I had was with former NGA director Bob Moret, and he believes that the cuts as proposed by sequestration are so painful that cooler heads will prevail and Congress is probably going to find a way out. For reference, during a presentation he made last week at our Geo Huntsville conference, he says that the size of the U.S. defense budget is nearly $700 billion, or 4.8% of the gross domestic product of the U.S. By comparison, Russia spends about 50 plus billion, that's about 4% of GDP, and China spends 110 billion, which is about 2.1%. So you can see that those are all far less than what the U.S. is currently spending. Lastly, as a direct result of these budget realities, we've come upon some things here in the geospatial industry that we know will happen. And one example I want to point to is that it caused certainly the impending merger of DigitalGlobe and GeoEye. And in that process, I think both companies are realizing that they had to change the way that they were doing business. Now, one example of this is GeoEye's acquisition of SpadAC, which was an analytical image analysis service. And even DigitalGlobe, for example, created a new web portal. So you're beginning to see some of these companies in the geospatial domain really begin to think about what their business model is and change it. And I think this is all a a direct result of these impending budget cuts, which we've known for some time. So, Adina, I'll leave it there. I really see these budget cuts as a mixed bag for geospatial technology and potential budget cuts or their individual cuts, and as well as job growth.
It is a mixed bag, and I'm glad that you pointed to the changes at GOI and Digital Globe trying to be innovative, trying to broaden the marketplace. And I have to be honest, I'm very skeptical, because both of those organizations, and I remember Digital Globe in particular, making a lot of noise over the past 7 or 8 years talking about, we want to move into other markets, we want to move into analytics, we want to move and support the private sector, bring money from other corners, and it just hasn't worked. I wish I could point to a whole series of very successful organizations that started up in the government sector, taking money primarily from the federal government, and then successfully moved into getting money from the private sector. And I'm just not finding them. In fact, what I'm finding is the reverse. A company like Metacarta, which came out of NQTEL, sort of CIA-backed funding and so forth, did reasonably well in the public sphere, tried very hard to get into oil and gas and into some other areas, and didn't quite work, got bought, probably not going to be a huge player. And the only success story that I can put my finger on is Keyhole, which was, again, an NQTEL-backed company that Google bought to make Google Earth, and is now quite successful serving Google and its customers, who are basically consumers and the private sector.
Yeah, absolutely right on that. And I'm glad you also mentioned Keyhole. That was one of the companies pointed to last week. I had this conversation with Dr. Mike Griffin, ex-Chief NASA Administrator, and he was at NQTEL when Keyhole was spun out of there. And that's a great example of trying to commercialize a particular research project, I guess, if you will. You know, that's a really great example.
Can you give me another great example?
The only thing I've come across recently, and again, it really borders what we would think of as commercialization, but Teledyne Brown Engineering, also based in Huntsville, had a CRADA with NASA, and they have come out with a new Earth observation platform called MUSE, which stands for Multi-User System for Earth Sensing. And that's an Earth imaging observation platform. It sits on the International Space Station, and this is the first time that at least Teledyne Brown says, is their foray into commercial space-based digital imaging business. Now, it's very new. They just started with this back in the they just put it up on the space station, I believe, in the May time frame. This is one of those organizations that for a long time lived off of government contracts, and And so they're trying to make a foray into the commercial sense, and I assume going to compete directly with the large payload guys like Digital Globe and GOI.
And we don't know how successful that's going to be, because that's in process.
Yeah, it's a new thing, right?
And let's just clarify for those who didn't catch the acronym: CRADA is a Cooperative Research and Development Agreement.
Correct. And I wanted to respond to one of the things you said, which was, you know, how are these companies really going to do it? And I had an eye-opening experience the last couple months, but it was brought home to me last week also at our conference. And that is, all of these companies that have made their living off of defense dollars have an entirely different business model than a commercial entity. And you know, all the while I'm thinking, well, they've got to make money. They've got to pay people, and they've got to be competitive. But they're only competitive in the government market. They know how to write proposals to get government work. They don't necessarily know how to succeed in the private sector, the true private sector, where they're not living off of government dollars. And somebody asked me when I was sitting on a panel, they said, well, what is it going to take for these companies to change? And my answer immediately was mindset. This is an entirely different mindset of how you compete in a different world. And I think this is what companies like Digital Globe are facing. I don't know if they need more marketing chutzpah. Maybe they ought to hire somebody from Procter & Gamble that's been in the commercial product business for ages. But it is a different mindset, and certainly a different, wholly different business model.
It really is. And let's jump over to two big players in geospatial who get a lot of money from the defense side of the government, but also from the civilian side, and that's ESRI and Intergraph. Right. In fact, Intergraph's corner that serves this market is called Security, Government, and Infrastructure, if I'm not mistaken.
That's true, but they also have a separate division called Intergraph Government Solutions, which is the proxy, separated by a proxy board from Hexagon, because specifically they have federal secure projects that they need to go after. So SG&I goes after primarily civilian, state, and local government. Intergraph Government Solutions after the federal business.
Right. And that actually raises an important point, and that's that you're focusing mostly on the DOD money, but there is plenty of government money that funnels down through the various agencies, including Homeland Security and EPA and Housing and Urban Development, down to the states, down to the local governments, that then gets spent on local GIS firms that do those local projects. And if that money starts drying up at the top, it's also going to dry up down that food chain. And I was at a panel yesterday with some employers from the state of Maine, one of whom was one of these very small consulting firms with two people. And she was asked about what's the future of hiring at your company. And she said, well, it really depends so much on how much money the small towns in Maine have. And if they don't have any money, they can't pay us, and firms like ours will go out of business. End of story.
Right. You know, real trickle-down effect for sure.
And those monies are everywhere. I just ran across a study done in Woodstock, New York, where it was all funded out of local agencies, the state agency, and I'm confident some of that money trickled down from the federal government.
What will happen is there will be less money at the federal level, and you can expect that. I think that this is a ringing bell for people who are looking for jobs, too, and who are trying to make themselves viable in the workplace. And we had been going along this path where we expected 10 to 13% year-over-year growth in geospatial technology. I would expect an impact. I don't know who I would, how much. I would be speculating only, but let's just say some, maybe a few percentage points that would impact the growth of the geospatial industry. And since so much of, especially the DoD work that that the major GIS firms depend on, all U.S. DoD work, you would expect some declining revenues going forward.
All right, so the hard question then that all of these organizations are going to turn around and point back to us and, frankly, all of their advisors is, what do we do? How do we make that change to better serve or newly serve a new market?
Well, I think has always been the real shining element of geospatial technology is its ability to manage projects more effectively. The last example I'll give is one. Again, I got so much information last week from our conference. Was a presentation by Dr. Myra Gray. She's the G3 G5 person, essentially equivalent to a one-star general on the civilian side for the Army Materiel Command. Now here's an agency whose motto is, if the Army shoots it, drives it, sleeps in it, or eats with it, they move it. And they have an entire operations center in the bottom of a big building that was just completed not long ago at Redstone Arsenal. And they are doing nothing but logistics planning. They are essentially the UPS for the U.S. Army. They are moving goods and people and things all over the world. And as we come to the end of two wars overseas, they're bringing home equipment. Or in another fashion, they're actually having a fire sale on the equipment, the Army equipment that they're leaving in place or that they don't have to move so far. So here is a perfect area for where geospatial technology will shine and for which there may be job opportunities.
And you're talking about taking the know-how that's in that group and pivoting it to serving the private sector?
Well, I think certainly there's a government agency that may have room for jobs, so they may not be as impacted. But certainly when you look at logistics, I got so excited about all of the possibilities for logistics, not just federal, but commercial. And we know that, of course, FedEx and UPS use the GIS all the time. I think that's a perfect area for the growth of geospatial technology. And I know also that companies like TomTom, with their business suite of software, are doing logistics planning all the time. So I think logistics is a great area for taking geospatial technology.
I'm going to steer in a slightly different direction as I look at this. And I think this is a really good opportunity for especially the small local consultancies that have been serving local government to really start making that push into the private sector. And maybe they do it with the software that they're already using, be it ESRI or Intergraph or MapInfo or whatever, or taking stock now in what's available in open source and sort of separating themselves from this long-term licensing requirement such that they can make their offer to their potential clients without that base price in there. So they are exclusively selling services. And that's a different kind of business model. You got to get your head around it. But I think that's sort of a potential new beginning that will, of course, translate all of the experience and all the know-how and all the data that they've already collected into this new platform.
Well, okay, I think that's a great place to stop. You've heard our recommendations. That's all the time we have for today. From us here at Directions Magazine, we'd like to remind you that there's an open call for presentations to our Location Intelligence Conference next May. We're also making an announcement this week that we are launching Location Intelligence Brazil in conjunction with the Mundo Geo Connect Conference. It'll be held June 19th, 2013 in Sao Paulo. For more information, visit www.locationintelligence.net.
If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can email us at editors@directionsmag.com, send us a tweet @directionsmag, or leave a comment where this podcast is hosted @directionsmag.com.
Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.